Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the NCAA Division I Committee on Infractions press conference. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star, then zero. And as a reminder, this conference is being recorded. And now I'd like to turn the conference over to Ms. Megan Durham. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Welcome to today's press call to discuss the NCAA Division I Committee on Infractions decision regarding the University of Louisiana Lafayette. As members of the media, you should have received a link to both the press release and the public decision, which contains the details of this case. This information can also be found at ncaa.org. The Committee on Infractions is an independent group comprised of representatives across NCAA membership and the public. The members of the Committee on Infractions to review this case include Michael F. Adams, Chancellor at Pepperdine University, John Black, attorney in private practice, Carol Cartwright, Chief Hearing Officer and President Emeritus at Kent State University, Alberto Gonzalez, Dean of the Law School at Belmont University and former Attorney General of the United States, Joel Maturi, former University of Minnesota Twin Cities Athletics Director, Jerry Miller, Chancellor at University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, and David Roberts, Vice President for Athletics Compliance at the University of Southern California. Carol Cartwright will now discuss the findings and decisions of the Infractions Committee. Following her opening comments, she will take questions.
Thank you. The decision of the Committee on Infractions details the findings and penalties in this case. Our comments today are designed to address your questions. However, the report stands on its own merits. The violations in this case centered on a former University of Louisiana Lafayette assistant football coach who violated NCAA rules by arranging fraudulent college entrance exam scores for five prospects and then denying his involvement. Each of the prospects was directed by the former assistant coach to take the exam at a rural Mississippi high school. Without information from the former assistant coach, the prospects would not have known about the test site location. Each prospect had to travel great distances to reach the test site. In previous entrance exams, the scores of four of the five prospects did not meet NCAA standards for initial eligibility. After taking entrance exams at the location the former assistant coach gave them, each of the five prospects scored significantly higher, and this made them all initial qualifiers under NCAA rules. Ultimately, the college exam provider canceled four of the five prospects' scores, citing unusual increases in exam scores from previous exams taken by the prospects and substantial erasure patterns. When the prospects became student athletes at the university and participated in competition before the violations were discovered, they competed while ineligible. The former assistant coach violated NCAA ethical conduct rules during the interview process when he denied his role in arranging the entrance exams and falsifying scores. He also did not cooperate with additional requests during the investigation. During the investigation, he also refused a request to sign a document that would have allowed the exam provider to turn over records to the university about who paid for the five prospects' exams. The panel noted that the university likely could not have stopped the former assistant coach because he concealed his activities. But ultimately, a university is responsible for its employees. The former assistant coach also provided a total of $6,500 to a football student athlete over the course of two semesters. The student athlete said the coach gave him the money while he was both a prospect and when he later enrolled at the university. The former assistant coach directed the student athlete to take an envelope of cash to the university's cashier's office and then bring a receipt as proof that he paid the money into his student account. After reviewing the case, the panel accepted the following penalties self-imposed by the university: a reduction of initial football scholarships by 3 for a total of 22 during the 2016-17 and 2017-18 seasons. The reductions over the 2-year period will total 6 initial scholarships. A reduction in the total number of football scholarships awarded by 5 in 2015-16 to 80 and by 3 in both 2016-17 and 2017-18 to 82. The reductions over the 3-year period will total 11 scholarships. A reduction in the number of off-campus recruiting days by 6 in the fall of 2015 and 22 in the spring of 2016. A reduction of official visits to 38 for the fall of 2015 and 44 total visits during the 2014-15 season. A prohibition of all recruiting communication for a 3-week period during the 2015-16 season, and a vacation of the records from the 2011 football season, including the team's participation in the New Orleans Bowl. Additionally, the panel prescribed the following penalties and corrective measures: a 2-year probation period from January 12, 2016 through January 11, 2018. An 8-year show cause order for the former assistant coach from January 12, 2016 through January 11, 2024. If he seeks employment at an NCAA member school, he and the school must appear before the Committee on Infractions. A $5,000 fine. An additional limitation in the number of official visits to 38 for the 2016-17 season. An additional 3-week ban on all university-initiated recruiting communication in the football program for the 2016-17 season. The 3-week ban should occur during the same 3 weeks as the university-imposed ban during the 2015-16 season, and an additional vacation of records for the 2012 through 2014 seasons in which student athletes competed while ineligible. The games impacted will be released by the university following their review of the report. This concludes my opening remarks.
Operator, can you please explain how reporters can indicate they would like to ask a question?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phone. You'll hear a tone indicating you've been placed in queue, and you may remove yourself from queue by pressing the pound key at any time. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. And we do have a question from the line of Tim Buckley with Daily Advertiser. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. First question is a two-parter, please. Can you describe the level of cooperation by UL during the investigation and the hearing as well? And also, what convinced the committee that there was no awareness of what was going on by the former assistant coach, by any other coaches at the program, including head coach Hudspeth?
As we note in our report, the panel commends the institution for its level of cooperation. The university expended substantial resources to expedite a thorough and fair collection and disclosure of information. And President Savoy and the athletics compliance director both personally invested substantial time and attention to the details of this investigation. So we note in our report that this is exemplary cooperation, and it's a model for the kind of relationship and cooperation that member institutions should strive for in the infraction process. Regarding the second part of your question, the committee believed that the totality of the information provided was convincing that the assistant head coach worked to conceal his activities and that it was likely difficult for the institution to know what he was doing.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star 1 on your phone. Our next question comes on the line of Doug Letterman with Insider. Please go ahead.
Hi, President Cartwright. Doug Letterman from Inside Higher Ed. Do you have any reason to think that there were other situations like this involved through this testing center, or was it purely the result of this personal relationship between the person at this testing center and this coach? Is it something that you've been able to explore, that the NCAA has been able to explore at all? And I guess, secondly, I just wondered if you could talk a little bit about the larger context surrounding this kind of test fraud. You mentioned the Memphis case in the infractions report, but I'm just wondering if you can sort of put this in perspective in terms of how significant a problem you think this might be association-wide.
We're just here today to talk about what is in this report and to talk about this specific University of Louisiana Lafayette case. And as you have an opportunity to review the full report, you will see that we do describe the relationship between the test exam administrator and the former assistant coach in this case.
The next question comes on the line of Daniel Pauling with Jackson Clarions Lafayette. Please go ahead.
Just two-part question as well. You know, the assistant coach, David Saunders, I guess, received the 8-year show cause. Did that stem completely from penalties regarding Louisiana Lafayette, or did it stem from other things he may have done at previous institutions? And how much investigation has been done into other institutions and his background at other places impact what y'all came up with today?
Again, this call is to focus on our report about this case and the University of Louisiana Lafayette. In the report, reference that the panel determined that regarding the former assistant coach, this is a level one aggravated violation and worked within the established penalty guidelines to determine our penalties for the former assistant coach in this case.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question for today's conference, please press star 1. And we have a question from the line of Tim Buckley, Daily Advertiser in Lafayette. Please go ahead.
Regarding the former assistant coach, why was he not named in the ruling today, even though he was named extensively, I believe, in both the initial findings and UL's response? And how much did his firing mitigate the penalties that were handed down? And also, a second item, regarding the probation, can you describe in this case what that entails, and specifically regarding a postseason ban, if that is included under the umbrella of probation, or whether there was no postseason ban imposed?
Okay, so you have a three-part question. First, it's the NCAA policy that we don't release names, so that's why you don't see any names in this report. Regarding, tell me again your second part of your question, please.
How much did the handling of his job status, his firing or non-retention, mitigate penalties?
Any employment decisions relating the assistant coach or anybody else, really, are the business of the university, and the NCAA does not comment on institutional employment practices or decisions. And then you asked about a postseason ban and probation. In this case, the panel was, as I noted earlier, operating within the penalty guidelines. And for this case, for the institution, the committee determined that it was a level one mitigated case and therefore operated within the prescribed penalty guidelines for that type of case. We did not impose a postseason ban.
Very good. Thank you.
The next question comes on the line of Jay Walker with the Louisiana Region. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Actually, my question was just answered concerning the postseason ban, and I appreciate the thoroughness in the response. Thank you.
The next question will come from the line of Brett Martell with Associated Press. Please go ahead.
Yes, thanks. I also have a question about the postseason ban and the decision not to impose one. If you wanted to expand any further on what you said, I'd be happy to take that comment. Otherwise, satisfied. Thanks.
No, I don't think any expansion is necessary.
And once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star one. And we have a question from the line of Tim Buckley with Daily Advertiser in Lafayette. Please go ahead.
Yes, I'd also like to check on the fact that in the original original report and the response as well, there were numerous references to six prospective student athletes and their activities at the test center. And it seems like today there's references to five. Now, I know that originally one of those was not someone who ultimately ended up signing with the institution, but can you just explain the and the numbers there?
If you take a look at the report, you'll see that there is a footnote explaining that, and I think it's best that you just check that footnote.
On the original report, in
our report that's released today, you'll see a footnote to that effect.
Thank you.
The next question will come from the line of Luke Johnson with The Advocate. Please go ahead.
Hi. Back to the original report, I believe the university stated that it didn't believe it would vacate any wins from the 2012 through 14 seasons because it felt that once students had completed coursework at the university, they become eligible. Is that not a correct line of thinking with that? And I know the university is going to expand on which games may be vacated, but maybe that was kind of the current explanation behind that.
Well, there are reinstatement issues in this case because students completed while ineligible. So those students need to seek reinstatement, and the appropriate way to work through your question here would be to follow up with the university on this reinstatement issue.
Thank you.
The next question comes to the line of Nick Gramillion with KLFY Houston.
It's actually KLFY Lafayette, but my question is also in regard to the vacation of the 2012-2014 seasons, and I was just wondering if you could clarify why only certain games would be vacated from those seasons as opposed to the entire 2011 season.
Remember that the university imposed penalties regarding the 2011 season, so the report indicates that the panel added additional penalties for the 2012 through 2014 seasons because there were student athletes who competed during those seasons who were ineligible. Now that this decision has been released, the university will need to review and determine which of those games are impacted. And at a future date, after the university has had that opportunity to review, they will release that information.
And at this time, there's no further questions in queue.
Thank you again for joining us today. This concludes our comments. A recording of this teleconference will be available in the near future on the NCAA website at ncaa.org.